It's not a rant, it's articulate warbling with Zach.
So, throughout this episode, it comes across as if I'm leading in with an introduction, like this big Sonic the Hedgehog review is going to feature a review of Bad Boys and all these other films, but we didn't end up going to the cinema because me and Laura had a bad experience and a bad day out where we went to Crawley and we came away a little bit dissatisfied, a little bit ruffled up, the atmosphere was bad and we just decided not to and just spent our time that weekend not going to the cinema. But featured in this mini episode is a review of Sonic the Hedgehog and Amygdala Tropolis by B.R. Yeager. And it's just me going solo. I was anticipating for us to go see a film and then review upon it. But I thought these little minor little segmentations where I am going solo that we're going to follow it up with the real rapport and the real reason that people, I think, and I believe, like Articulate Warbling is both me and Laura talking and nattering away. But this one is me going solo. Out on my own again. Much like the genesis of it. But this episode does feature Sonic the Hedgehog review and a review of Amygdala Tropolis by B.R. Yeager. Unless DB cuts out the bits where I introduce it or offer you or proffer you the potential for more reviews coming from me and Laura. I do apologise on that. Things are a bit haphazard, but, you know, we're amateurs. We'll just go with the flow, man. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed this episode and, yeah, enjoy. Hello and welcome to another episode of It's Not Our Aunt. It's Articulate Warbling with me, the Warbler, your host, Zach Ferguson. Now, a while ago I was ranting and raving upon the expectations I had for Sonic the Hedgehog, initially centred in and around the split decision by Jeff Fowler, the director, and the creative team, not the producers, the creative team behind Sonic itself and the people who were in the position who made the decision to make him look like the atrocity he was in the first ever official release of their footage. And there was a lot of rumour online of he's got shins, he's got calves, like the ultra-realistic side of things. And they actually listened to the fan base and they took it on the chin and they went, no, we're just going to create the Sonic everyone knows and loves. I wanted to try and do their own thing, but someone as iconographic and famous and culturally relevant and prevalent and still as important to the gaming and Sega games and arcade games and the evolution of video games, you can't really do much to him without the fans kicking up a fuss. So they reacted to it, and the new release trailer also seemed to settle and totally know what it was going for. Now, I've just come back from viewing Sonic the Hedgehog, and my expectations were middling, but I was just happy and exalted by the results with what they showed us with the redesign. Got to give it to the creative team, especially the VFX artists. They were given a little bit more room by postponing it from a November 2019 release to a Valentine's Day release, which is quite hilarious considering that Blur Animation Studios, which is headed by Tim Miller, his debut movie, his directorial debut, Deadpool, was released. That's so much similar in the design of the script to Sonic the Hedgehog and many other films that have come before. Now, what is my initial reaction? It's all right. It's generic. It's one of those CGI character films based upon a very famous property where it always has to have a human aspect story to it, where CGI character of whichever property it's related to or is finds a human, finds friendship. Comparisons have unfairly been sidled along with the praise and the box office success of Pokemon. The success of Sonic is levelling up to hit the same revenues and statistics, but I mean on a praiseworthy thing. I think Pokemon Detective Pikachu is visually stimulating. It's hilarious. It treats the characters in the world irrelevantly, hilariously. They pay tribute, they pay homage, they really respect the material, but also layering with that charm and cockiness and alternative comedy that Ryan Reynolds has really evolved. It's not just the dickhead comedy, but also the sweet comedy, the self-reverential, playful comedy, the unabashed, almost self-analytical, critical artist, and translated that so well and perfectly. And the story of Detective Pikachu Pokemon, another reason I didn't watch that in cinemas was I thought it's going to be the same thing, a big property forced out in hope for a franchise. But they did really well by this, and in the wake of that and in light of that, there was a lot of imbuement and anticipation to thinking Sega games, all that type of passion, all that type of dedication and obvious love and adoration and respect that they have for the property, like Sonic and the games and the history. Were they going to do well by the fans? Not just the games, but people who are a fan of the character. I experienced the character for his television series, the one where he played and strummed the guitar, but I have played Sonic myself. I'm not a huge nerd where I'm an encyclopedia of knowledge on the world and universe. I'm aware of certain things and designs, but it's a pop cultural phenomenon. And when you make a franchise, it can be endearing. It can really steer it in directions you do not anticipate. But I knew this was going to be a middling experience, but I didn't know how kid-light this was. It's very Elvin and the Chipmunks, sadly, with the relationship of Sonic and the human characters. And with the injection of Jim Carrey, it really saves the movie. He's on his real early heydays form. He's being playful, he's being spastic, he's being all over the place, he's being OTT, but in such a fashion that it's a rarefied in Jim Carrey art form into itself, and it's forgivable because it's coming from him. But from anyone else, you'd go, oh, he's really riffing on Jim Carrey. But because he's Jim Carrey and it is his art form and his style of humour, it really elevates it. And there are some action sequences that are really, really well visualised. There's a lot of criticism for the similarities between the Quicksilver slow-mo sequences in Days of Future Past related to this. Of course, you are inspired by movies that have done it well before, and in its own spin and its kid-like fashion, it does its own thing. Brian Singer and the team and visual effects team behind Days of Future Past envisioning super speed in such a fashion that they did with Days of Future Past. Of course, you're going to nip and tuck and take what worked so well for another film and try and translate it in your own way. The character of Sonic himself, he's lovable, he's charming, he's energetic, he's hyperactive. He is Sonic, and the actor who plays him, whose name I cannot remember, but I know that he's an American comedian. I don't know if he's well-respected, I don't know if he's loved or adored, but he really captures the essence of Sonic. Just the rest of the movies, it's just generic. It's too kid-light, it's too safe, and the only thing it really has going for it is the finale action sequence, but it's a sum of all the parts of what's come before, but I've got to give it its dues. It's a middling, mediocre children's film that fans can garner some things from it. There's some wink, wink, nudge, nudges. Some of the comedy is not overplayed on Jim Carrey's part, but on Sonic's part. He is sometimes too hyperactive. But again, this has been another cinema experience where there was 12 girls in front of me. I don't know what age they were. They were probably age appropriate for it, but the way they were clad and dressed up, jailbait much, and it was really petrifying. I was thinking, why are these young women to begin with acting so petulant? And then when the lights came up, I was like, oh my fucking god. It's almost as if they come from a family history of whoring, and the mothers are like, put this makeup on, you need to make some money. And you know, all those fathers who go to see those kiddie films, yeah, get out there. I don't know. That's that's my weird fictional interlude and a whimsical, warbling perspective on it. But the film has character beats that are great. Jim Carrey is fun. Sometimes he is reined in. There seems to be a level of self-awareness. But then other times he just kind of contradicts that subtle nuance. Not to a performance, but to the comedic parameters, the levels, the octaves of where it can go. I'm just really disappointed it didn't hit that certain level of interest or impact. James Marsden is in another role. He's used to co-starring opposite CGI characters, like he did in Hop, that atrocious, awful Russell Brand Easter movie. But there's not, there's no, the gags and the homages, they're too on the nose, and this film isn't subtle. It's not subtle, and you could have gone either way. You could have thrown Easter eggs at the camera. It really wanted to go for an almost meta edge in a Deadpool fashion in the beginning, introduced with the narration and the quirky rewinding, going back to the very beginning where Sonic is doing he is producing the sound effect himself, where you rewind a VHS tape and it goes. It's playful tones like that. I mean, they're just cut short or they're not reintroduced. And it is a little bit disappointing, but I like the visual effects, the designs, but just short-lived. And when action sequences came about, it's like, we need to put action sequence here. And for a short movie, it's quick, it's punchy, it's snappy. It's just too leaning heavily on, we need to get the children in. We need to get it in. We need this relationship, this human and CGI character relation. We don't. With the merits of the visual effects team and the designers and the direction and the characterization, have faith. It's almost as if when they do these live action, in quotation marks, adaptations of notarized characters, it's like they have to be specific and just carrying across this mediocrity of live action adaptations of beloved characters. Whereas if you see something in the parameters of a Disney film and it's full-fledged animated movie, there's more freedom, there's more paciness, there's more veneer, it's less tarnished by, I think, parameters of filming in live action, and that's not even a good excuse. I just think there's this almost geriatric general semblance of going in to make something like this, and I think Pokemon Detective Pikachu really excelled at doing right by the general audience, well done beautifully by the fans, and also as a singular great movie. If you never have an affiliation with Pokemon before, you love it in of itself. You love Pikachu. Here, it's like you're either a fan or you're going to give it the benefit of the doubt. It's either going to be a movie that you had no expectations for, but then had a little bit of interest due to the redesign, a little bit of gumption. You went in with no expectations, went in with love, and that you're going to love it no matter what. You're going to go in and just watch it as a movie because it looked a bit quirky. It's got Jim Carrey. There's a lot of factors behind this that are very appealing, but it doesn't really play up on those levels. The action sequences are dotted here and then the finale, it's globe-tropping, and it could have implemented the passion and the drive and that editorial flourish throughout the rest of the movie. It just seems to be so boardroom mandated, this and this. Instead of being playful, it seems if it's a full-fledged animated feature film, there's more room for variants of humour and tone, and the tonality with these live adaptations and live action franchise films like your Dragon Ball Evolution, which is the worst film I've ever seen in my life, or it's Alvin the Chipmunks, it just takes something away from what came from it before. It's too commercialized, it's too cookie cutter, and it falls into that staple of, it needs to be about the humans and CGI character. Just let the animation flow. There's evidence that with the power and the creativity and freedom within the animation parameters, why can that not be lent to a, in quotation marks, live action? Sonic is a full-fledged CGI character here who's emoting. Why do you need this infrastructure of human faces to make it relatable? The animation is good enough, which it is here, and it probably was even before the redesign. It's not that the visual effects were bad, it was just the redesign was just off-putting and ugly, and it didn't tick that pop culturally ingrained neon lit tick for you and so many other people. Why do we have to have humans to make it relatable and to ground it? Why can't we just have the CGI character of Sonic? Yes, he has happenings with humans, but you have a story of his own volition, of his own discovery. Why does he need this human device? And this is the failure of a lot of live action adaptations and big screen properties being put on the big screen. And they did it perfectly and masterfully and narratively and resourcefully and just emotionally well in Pokemon Detective Pikachu. Whereas here, they've not done well. But I hope if they do a sequel, that the characters, even of the humans, do lend a little bit more than them just being people there. So Sonic can eventually go, oh, I've got friends, I can have a high five. Yes, it's cutesy, yes. It's mundane. Yes, it's safe. I'm not expecting some big extravaganza, transgressive thing. I'm just expecting a little bit of flourish, a little bit of creativity, a little bit of strengthening it up, taking something that can either be, as I said, good, bad, or terrible. A lot of the times they are that, good, bad, or terrible, but never great. And Pokemon Detective Pikachu really spoil us with that. And I think Sonic could have done that. It's got Tim Miller behind it, Blur Animation, Blur Studios. It's got a creative team behind who are willing to listen to the fans. I hope that if there is a sequel, which by the box office numbers there will be, I really hope there is, because there's a lot of potential there with the character of Sonic, and maybe just do something with the humans apart from them just being there as lean-tos for Sonic, because overall, it just doesn't lend any weight or validation. It's just following that same three-act structure. Lonely, disassociated, CGI character, insert whichever property or company or character it comes from. Finds human, they work around certain things, they both help each other to rediscover their place and purpose. Whereas those tropes and those cliches are inherent in Pokemon Detective Pikachu, there is really good, strong script writing and storytelling going on. And I think it does start with the script. But aside from that, I will have to give Sonic the Hedgehog, with my critic's cap on, 2 stars. It's nothing special, and I have come away going, oh, but I still have that anticipation. If I came out and I was probably 9 or 8, I'd go, best movie ever! And if I'm going to be fair, if I took my own child there and I'd come out and I felt like I wanted to appreciate it on that same level, but I still had to have that critic's cap, yeah, it's a 3-star movie. But for me, with my critic's cap on, and knowing where it could have improved upon, and where it so evidentially was riffing on other things, and it didn't really take its time to evolutionise that of what's come before, because we're all inspired by what has come before, but we just need to approach it and appropriate it in a different manner to make it original again. And for that, I give Sonic the Hedgehog 2 stars. Disappointed, but if you have children, go watch it. And even if you're single and you want to give it a try out, watch it. Because you may come away and go, oh my god, that's like the best Sonic the Hedgehog movie ever. Because it's the only one that we've been offered so far. But that's me on the review for Sonic the Hedgehog. The next reviews following will be for Bad Boys for Life, Dark Water, and which was the other one? Me and Laura had it mapped out. Oh yes, Jeff Wadlow is teaming up with Jason Blum's production team and production house and overlord of low-budget horror with big gross revenue with Fantasy Island. Jeff Wadlow, who I think is a really undervalued director, especially with Kick-Ass 2, which I think is a naturally and rightfully extended transgression and subversion and evolution of Kick-Ass 1. So I'll be interested to go into those things, and I hope that Laura will be with me for those reviews. Laura, I don't think Laura had any inclination to go see this with me. Way back when, I was like, I wonder if Laura's going to come and see this with me. Is she going to come see this with me? Yeah, I'll just force her to come see it with me. But work duties and what little time she does have to spare, she's quite careful with the time that she offers and certain films to go see, because she don't want to see any old crap, because it takes time away from another potentially film. But we are hopefully going to see Bad Boys for Life Friday by the skin of our teeth, and hopefully she'll join us for those reviews. But I'm going to leave you with this review, and this will fizzle out to some probable ad or advertisement on DB Spitzer's behalf, and I will not see you or hear from you, but you will definitely hear from me after this wee little what would you call it, DB? Advertisement? Interlude? Take it from here, DB Spitzer. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of It's Not a Rant, It's Articulate Warbling with me, I, the warbler in question. Today, Laura will not be with us, so all of you sickos out there, pumping your meat piece. Oh, woman voice. She isn't here, so pump that piece of meat. Make it a meat feast in dedication to myself and the books I will be reviewing on today's episode. Now, I want to start this episode by reviewing a book I've just finished. I've been aware of this writer for a while by being a writer myself, an experimentalist, and on the social medias. And this is Amygdalatropolis. Amygdalatropolis. Fuck, even it's broken down in its base aspects, almost phonetically, in such a strategized ways on the cover. It still gets your tongue tied. Now, I've allowed it to settle.
upon reading it, and after reading it, I delved head full on into a review for Goodreads, of which I'm going to use as notations and starting points. But since it's really dawned upon me, and I've read a few specific interviews pertaining to this particular piece in question, it's very apparent that B.R. Jaeger is a powerhouse of many ideas, and the fluctuation and the relationship of narrative flow, how everything juxtaposes and deposes and overtly destroys. B.R. Jaeger has completely ruined me with this book. It doesn't take away the fact that this book is beautifully written and it has layer after layer of study, but it's parasitic, much like the cover art of parasites eaten away from within, from without, of an intestinal tract. It is layer and layer upon of study, analysis, satire, poetics, and the strangest of places, and from the weirdest of topics and issues, garnered all around the social media platform, the forums, the dark web, the real recesses of villainy online. This book is awfully dangerous and far too close for comfort for me when it comes to the nature of its material and its point and its narrative strands and freights corresponding with each other, with the different styles and different formations and different perspectives and its overall reasoning to exist. It is an evil book, but evil is inherent in all of us. But even those of us who think we are the purified and the preachiest of them all. But an evil you're compelled to read and participate in. And this, the real strength of this and power is, it's not distance. You are in there, this quagmire of just awfulness, horrible attitudes. Many might say right-leaning, some may say overt left-leaning. There's no politics here. It is just a raw analysis and story about perversion of humanity, perversion of platforms, perversion of narrative, perversion of life. It is corruptible to one who is already has a screwed up disposition or position in life or mentally. This is a hard and truthful delve into the heart of true sickos, and not just sickos in themselves, but people who partake in admittedly posing questions, posing unanswerable such questions that, you know, this book has me tongue-tied. It has me rather speechless because it's working on so many planes of analysis, study and storytelling. It is the most beatific, harrowing experience that you'll read. It is like one harrowing themselves to look at the latest expose online. And it is corruptible, it is parasitic to an already fucked up mentality. Not everyone is normal, but if you're of a position where you think you're quite, you know, secure, this book really shows you the evil, and there's no comfort or distancing of it, subjugated up on where the source is coming from. There's a compulsion to read these horrible things and this substructure of serial killers and their monologues and their internal journalistic diarised ways. And now with the platform of social media, everyone has to be opinionated. Everyone has to be out there. Even the true embodiments of the detriment of being human is delving into nasty, inhumane, admittedly self-confessed, not nihilists, but perverts, but not just perverts of the nature of snuff movies, but perverts who get the kick, and it makes you almost part of this corruption. It's not an easy read, and in a lot of ways it's experimental in how it captures online forums, comments, threads, linkages, the infrastructure and substructure and overall encapsulation of what it may be like to be on such forums. We've been on forums talking about movies, and there's always that person who harries out their opinion, and it's all disjointed. But the writer, B.R. Jaeger, said something that was very interesting to me in a recent interview with 3AM magazine. He says, "I did not want a megatropolis to somewhat reflect the experience of being online. I did want Amygdala Tropolis to somewhat reflect the experience of being online, of scrolling through and between content, having multiple threads alternating, which this book does superbly, separated by left and right text alignment as though they were separate tabs or windows open on a desktop. And he masterfully portrays that and exemplifies that. To do that on a platform that is a paperback, to capture that distance, glossy, modernistic divide and sensorium, such as being online on an iPhone, on a tablet, on a laptop, it is ingeniously done, but it's somehow more intimate. You're more intimate with a book, and that transcribes certain interrelationships with a book and form and experience and sensoriumization of yourself. It makes it ever so more intimate. I will continue with the quote. Excuse me. And I've just lost my place. See, I'm all over the place. But this is another one. This is a minor point. This is what BRDA had to say. But I would argue that the presence of this kind of text in the narrative creates a reading experience that's more reflective of the way we all read now. Also, I'm adding, in my opinion, Zach Ferguson, the experience of how we type out comments and type out this raw, uncensored need to offer out our experiences or our opinions or our own sick, intrepid idealizations and ideals and morals. And back into B.R. Jaeger's interview, by rapid visual scanning and by precisely not reading. And that is what encapsulates this book to a finer point. And it's very apparent in the experience whilst reading, but whilst outside. It's a layer upon layer of real, raw, uncensored ingenuity. It's something that a lot of people could easily ascribe to, oh, it's easy, this stuff is available readily online. But what B.R. Jaeger does is he captures it, the mentalities, the variant of personalities. Each person is saying the same thing, but they all have their own take. It's all unedited, all rushed out, all vitriolic. And it's just it's emblematic of social media platform. It speaks upon more of the mind and disease that is social media, and given space and room for these types of characteristics and personalities, then the people in question. It's almost saying, is social media almost malforming these people or giving them an inclination or offerance to be that type of characteristic? The book is also poetical. It is also very fractured, but defined and definitively for me, it's subliminal in its corrosiveness. It's just so fucking disturbing, unnerving, disjointed. It's poignantly nihilistic, violent in its deposition, and its far too truthful display and example and capturing of real evil that, as I've aforementioned, that's inherent and hiding in the dark realms of online strata. Or even people for whom we may pass in the streets or even acknowledge or give the time of day before, are they of this calibre? And you just don't know anyone ever truly, do you? This isn't nihilistic in its aesthetic and artistic expression, but the exploits what nihilism can transcend and ultimately be malformed into. It's analytical, the truly ill of mind and soul, and the very juxtaposed interrelationship and pairing and duality that is the intrusive, corruptful, eerie and powerful, far too fucking real, veering into non-fiction while also allowing some respite in its warped pseudo-fictional manner execution, combined with the reality of social media and platforms offered and how we experience them and execute them and abuse them. It's capturing what one assumes a person of such a perverse and perverted nature is like online, tapping into something that of which we all have witnessed or seen exemplified, whether it's via media, online, in print, whether seen by segment of the types of comments made by individuals online partaking in such sickness, whether we've witnessed it by having such shared online in screenshots on those online vigilante groups and where they set up stings and deliberate incidents to verify and vilify rightfully and verify that these people are of ill intent. Or if it's on the journalistic side where we are exposed to this and with that comfortable distance where someone's had to do the deep digging and dirt and we're just showed the exploits of their hard work, of their deep delvings of his or hers winning expose and article, we have been party to the realities of what people get up to online via articles, all these documentaries, all out on Netflix and various platforms, online, still party and part of that ever-evolving reality of the social media platform? Were these people and attitudes and characters are unveiled via the comments put out there from themselves, from this person or that person? And we are lucky in that we are always distanced by this manner of exposure. Whereas this book, you are in there. These dark spaces, these secreted depths of malevolence, of comments and forums, where they are as a whole united by their sick wants and obsessions and inhumane tastes, sharing and particulating, circulating snuff videos, sick uploads of dark web imagery, of potential child pornography, which is heavily, explicitly hinted upon, but never detailed, luckily enough. But I would not put it past B.I. Yeager to go beyond and try his hand at exposing that reality and that uncomfortable sickness. It's about the correspondence, and not so much a correspondence, a disconnect from social media. It's not a social media platform. It is corruptible and it is parasitic by nature. It's corruptive, seedy, malicious, atrocious. All of this, such like these characters and these realities and these people who are out there on the dark web doing these things, their purviewings, is similar by trait and design by our purviewings, just vicariously or through third parties or through the distance and circulatory of journalistic expression and exposure. All online. And it is scarily and intimately captured and recreated here in this book. It shows, exemplifies and captures them, these perverts, these twisted characters, for what they truly are. You are part of it. Here in an all-too-revealing close proximity and fashion. It is ingenious and fucking terrifying. This is an assault and read. As you feel the slime, the evil, the mania, the darkness creep out, you feel awful for reading on, and it makes you feel dirty. You are partaking yourself. It makes you feel complicit almost by previewing these fictional pieces that are so true to the actual types of characters living out their sordid lives online in such a way. Even though it is purely fictional, you feel awful, you feel corrupted, and you perhaps feel as evil. Whereas these people have no conscience. They may be hyper analytical about themselves and aware that we like this sick stuff, but they don't really see the real inherent dormant evil that they're personifying and the procreation of social media platforms and the abuses amassing. It's also undercut with a dark liquid comedic energy and irrelevance and sharp and bitter satire that it's like acidic bile. You're trying to swallow it down, and it's centred on a a recluse, a person only referred to as 1404, that's how I pronounce his name, which a lot of other people on this specific website, specific dark web page or go under, and we're with this one 1404 who is a recluse, hasn't left his room in 6 years, has a strange alternate routine like relationship with his mother and father, specifically his mother, who later in the book he starts obsessing and envisioning having sex with, being confined, not having that, living his life through the computer and through these faux emotions and realities, and also these horrible realities of such smut and filth and vitriol and evil amassed in video files, images. It's a precise experience. It's a hodgepodge of narrative threads juxtaposed, illumined in certain other aspects. This book is dense of intent and purpose and message, and it's also vastly cosmic too. Horrific, psychologically assaulting, disturbing, hilarious, odd, scathing, and deftly and bravely handled by Yeager. What I've spoken upon hasn't even skimmed the surface, but this book has been the most difficult I have had to read in a very long time, and to process and to give thought to it anymore leave me spewing more hyperbole than I necessarily need to. But I will go on, because this book deserves it. It deserves that study analysis. So much has been garnered and put into this. A lot of people could evenly, offhandedly say, oh, anyone can write this type of book. No, there's a deftness and a subtleness and a ingenuity that B.I. Yeager has applied here, with not just research, but with the dense levels of introspection, societal implication, societal malformation. It captures that experience of what we all go through. when online, per viewing, in forums and threads and comment sections on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, or except this is pitted in the darkness that no one really ever within themselves want to even discover or reach on out for, just to see what it's about. Not in a sick, perverted sense that they might like it, but a sick, perverted sense to think, how easy is it to go there? With this book, you don't need to do that. And there's a numerous variant of amounts of links contained in this book, almost offering you, daring you, dare you look at this, dare you look at this and be repulsed and be horrified by it. Dare you be as brave as I have to implement this faux reality, this non-fiction, this pseudo-fiction. And as some people online have admitted, I've tried the websites, they're not existent, they are fake. Of course they fucking are, because then it would make B.R. Jaeger the person in question, unless from a journalistic analysis side of things, as well as to the people who partake in it, and as are sick and corruptible. But it shows that the dark recesses of the web themselves, these videos, they are making their way onto the most streamlined, mainstream levels of platforms. You will find videos of beheadings, ISIS propaganda on Twitter. And that's when it gets taken off, and then its life is evolved into the darker recesses of social media and the online verse. It is a book about message boards, the certain calibre of people that you purview and analyse and study. People that actually stop you and make you pause and go, you exist? Do you actually think like that? Or is this all a front? But applying it to the darker verse, the darker recesses of that very vague and uncomfortable place that only you give permission to journalists or people of an authoritarian position to look at and go. It's not our jobs to do that. And B.R. Jaeger makes a great satirical observation of this, and not just specific to the dark web, but in general, people who get a kick out of weird, obscure videos, not of a cinematic or artistic variety, but people going out their way to be evil, such as Don't Fuck With Cats documentary that masterfully B.R. Jaeger alludes to before that documentary itself was out there. So this story and this information, this conglomeration of happenings and incidents are already there for the taking for those who are savvy to it. I am very uncomfortable about the dark web, about people who search out snuff video. It makes me uncomfortable. I'm reading about it and being forced and almost being a participant in it in such a way of this book is the ingenuity of it. It's Amygdalatropolis, which Amygdalatropolis is a masterpiece. A real great, not just satire, but a monologue, analogue, study, journalistic, metaphysical, pseudo-nonfiction, pseudo-real fiction, pseudo-observational comedy, expose of the detriment of not just online forums and the online platform giving space and room for such vitriolic, hateful, nasty, twisted, corrupted, parasitic formations wasted as human breath. But there's something a lot more, even more intimate and delicate, touching upon our main antagonist, protagonist, as 1404. Is he evil? Is he true evil? Is he a participant? Is he partaking? Is he implicit? Is he part of the problem? Or is he just another little cog, part of the cogs and webwork and pistons and the whole mechanics of it? I don't know. There is so much here to dissect. But I think read it on your own terms and then flit between different interviews where B.R. Jaeger really goes into great depth, informing you on for certain things that may have been niggling or may not have come across in such an extent. It's a book that you may have to read more than once. I am not willing to read it more than once because it unnerved me that much. But with this source of information and place, I will go into it again because it is a masterful, modernistic piece of social commentary. And I will have to give it 5 stars. It is a sensational read. I utterly adored it. I'm sorry that I've been fumbling and mumbling, but it's one of those books that it did. It made me uncomfortable. It got under my skin. I felt dirty. I felt raw. I felt almost as if I was highlighting these links available in the book and searching them out myself to try and prove to myself that this stuff exists out there. It's actually out there. And that scares me more than anything. The human condition. What can we be pushed towards it, and not the fear of, oh, I might like it, I might turn into one of these sickos, but that thing of being exposed to something that you can't unsee. I've seen death in my time, I've seen beheading videos, and that was enough for me. A friend going, oh, hey, look at this. The book has put a real transmogrification of all emotions, all analysis, all studies, the whole emblem of the misappropriation of social media's platforms, forums, you fucking name it. And then some. 5 stars. I recommend you read anything by B.R. Jaeger. 5 stars. Now, next review is For Holy Land by Rowan Klasnick.